As was mentioned yesterday evening, we had a wonderful time of fellowship in which we were able to have a tremendously good chilies, four different ones and all sorts of extra things. But as much as I love to eat, playing games with the Zumbrum family kind of tops my list. And if you ever want to play the hardest game of Uno you will ever play, you'd play it with the two youngest Zumbrum girls. It will be a killer, I'll tell you that much. They're ruthless. They want to win. But it really is an enjoyable time. Whenever we get together, it's an extremely good time just to be together, whether we're eating, playing, whatever it is. Because in those times, so many of us get a chance just to relax maybe a little bit more than we do in our worship service. We talk a little differently than we do after services or before it, and we just share in each other's lives in a little deeper and fun way, and it's a great opportunity. I want to just highlight one that is coming up, and that's this coming Saturday. I'm going to make my pitch for Saturday. This is to all of you guys that are out there. So Saturday morning at, I think it's 8:30, isn't it 8:30? 8:30 Saturday morning, we're going to meet over here, and we're going to just spend some time. We'll have a light breakfast together and just sharing and talking and doing some study and trying to think of how we as men within this congregation can help really develop a relationship with each other, a fellowship with one another, and a fellowship with God. And so we just want to get together and spend a little time just talking and growing together. So we get the ladies that get to do these things more frequently. And so we're going to do this on Saturday. So any of you guys that want to show up here on Saturday, I think we'll have a good time together. There is a verse in the Bible that many Christians know. It's a verse that is so used so frequently, been preached so frequently, that it's kind of lost its wonder and awe. And I want to start by putting the verse into its context. And in order to do that, I want you to go back in Scripture to what we call the Last Supper, normally called the Last Supper, that night in which Jesus was going to be betrayed. And while you get a lot that goes on in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and I've preached in John 13, I want to go back to John 13, and I want you to listen to just how John begins that evening. John 13, verse 1. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, here's the phrase, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Or some translations would say he shows them the full extent of his love. Jesus takes what most of us center around because of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the Lord's Supper that we just partook of. John paints a picture of that night, knowing that those stories, those teachings have already been given to us, and brings out some things that Matthew and Mark and Luke didn't fully bring out. And so, we've talked about this before, Jesus, wanting to show them love, does the strangest thing. He washes their feet. He gets up from the table. He puts a towel around them and he takes a basin of water and he goes and he washes their feet. And they don't understand. And we've talked about that before. And when he gets done doing that, he talks about how he, as their teacher, as their master, if he does that, that they need to be doing the same type of thing. But this is all in the context of where Jesus is going with this. So John helps us to understand the purpose of the evening that night was to help them to understand love. What does it mean to love each other? So we come down, Jesus comes down after that is done, and I want to pick up with verse 34. If you have a Bible, you can look at 34. I'm going to break it into three sections. Jesus begins by saying, "A new commandment I give you." Now, they're at the dinner table. What point in time this is going on, before the bread, before the cup, I don't know. They're at the dinner table. Jesus says, "A new commandment I give you." And I would think we're on the heels of the Passover, this great feast, if you will, and time of reflection, spiritual reflection of Israel. I could almost picture the 12 kind of leaning in like, "Okay, Jesus, what's the new command that you're going to give us?" And he says that you love one another. Well, that's not a new command. Go back to the book of Deuteronomy. That's a really old command, you know. Go back to the book of Leviticus, loving your neighbor as yourself. It's an old command. But Jesus is wanting this group of men at this dinner table to understand love. He's wanting them to make this personal. I want you to think about it in this sense. Simon the Zealot is at the dinner. He's one of the 12. And Matthew the tax collector is one of the 12. Do you think there might have been a little disagreement between the two? I would. I mean, Simon gets the phrase "the zealot," so we know he's kind of passionate. And Matthew is like the total opposite of what you ought to do as a Jew, and he's a tax collector for the Roman Empire. Now all of a sudden, Jesus leans into them and says, "Here's what you need to do. You are to love one another." By the way, that's more than put up with. There's a difference. Okay. I know we're laughing. I won't say put up with you. You have to put up with me. Okay. You have to live with my foibles and my weird characteristics. You put up with certain things. That's not what we're talking about. Loving you is not putting up with you. Loving you is desiring the best for you. Loving you is looking at me, not so much as less than, but as seeking to lift you up. I'm going to love you so that you have everything you need to grow and to flourish. Do I have to put up with certain things along the way? Yes, I do. But that's not the command. The command isn't put up with your brother. The command is to love him. And then we get the kicker. He says, "Just as I have loved you, so you also are to love one another." You want to know how to define love. Jesus says, "Look at me." Can I go back to Old Testament passages and read in Deuteronomy 6 and read in Leviticus and read in other places about this calling of loving God and loving each other? Absolutely, I can. Are there commands around it? Sure, there are. Jesus says, if you want to define love, as in how to do love, then you love the way I loved you. Do you realize Judas had his feet washed that night. Tell me how to love like that. Jesus knew that his time had come. Jesus knew what Judas was going to do within hours. But to show the fullness of his love, he washes the feet of Judas. That's not put up with. It takes it to a deeper level. So we open a series of one another. And in that series, we're going to start with this idea of loving one another. And there's lots of passages we could go to, and normally you'd jump to probably 1 John because that's got a bunch of those love one another phrases in it. But I want to take us back to Paul's writing to the church in Rome. I want to go there. And before I get into the text, I want you to listen to verse 1. Paul would write to the church in Rome, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship, your act of service in God's kingdom. I want you to be a living sacrifice. That means I want you to die to you and live for him. That is, zero you, 100% God. Now, I know we don't get there perfectly, but that's exactly what he's calling for. So you can't run away from the goal just because we don't meet the goal. The goal is still the goal. I'm going to present my body as a living sacrifice. How do you put some flesh onto that type of a phrase? And he begins to do it through those next couple verses. But I want us to jump down to verses 9 through 13. Because in 9 through 13 is the part where we're going to spend some time today. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, but fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints and seek to show hospitality. So he says, I want you to present your bodies as a living sacrifice. How do I do it? Well, here's a list of verses that are kind of your beginning point. I'm not sure I can get beyond the beginning point. And the first thing he says in this list, and we're only going to be in 9 and 10, is love needs to be, and actually in the Greek language, it's put in the negative, not hypocritical. My translation puts it into the positive. Love needs to be genuine. Genuine love is not putting up with. It's a seeking what is best for the other person. Hypocritical love is to say, I love you, but then not act in accordance with that love for you. To say, I love Jesus Christ, but then to live my life counter to Jesus Christ. That's hypocritical. So my love, and Paul loves to put love. Love, Paul puts love at the beginning of almost all of his lists. Okay? Go look at all the different lists that Paul writes, and love generally starts most of those lists. It's that overriding concept. Love needs to be a genuine, non-hypocritical. Which means, according to Paul, according to God, abhor what is evil, hold fast to what is good. We'll change some wording. Hate what is evil, cling to to what is good. Most of us put up with evil and try to do good. We're missing it. This is a high calling. Okay? When we're talking about one another, and we're talking about how are we going to live this life, he says, it starts by hating that which is evil, abhorring it. My love is so great, not just for God, but also for you, that when I see a fellow Christian struggling in a sin, I hate that sin for what it's doing to the person that I love. I mean, what they're going through sickens me because it's hurting the one that I care so deeply about. So I've got to learn to hate sin. Not put up with, not get over it, not just say, well, you know, I need to be good and I need to talk nice and be nice. Yes, those are all true. I've got to hate sin, abhor it. And it's not just the negative, because when I am hating that sin, because it is sin, I have to do something in the replacement, and that is cling to, hold on to all that is good. So if sin is everything that takes me away from God or anybody that I love away from God, I've got to hold on to all the things that bring us closer to God. I want to cling to that. Does it change my personality? If it doesn't, it should. Because I wasn't that good before I became a Christian. And I'm telling you, it's been a struggle since I become a Christian. So I'm hating the evil. I'm seeing evil the way God sees evil. I'm seeing good the way God sees good. And I want to cling to that which is good. I really want to hold on to it. I want to be the blessing in somebody's life because of the good that is going on. I want to see good in others. I want us to understand that, yes, we may have failings in our life, but that walking in that light, that striving to do what is right, is a good thing. And I want to build us up in that walk. So I'm going to cling to every degree of hope I have for doing good. And I know that in order to do that, I've got to get a mindset that sin is always, always, always bad. It's never going to be the right thing. It might be the easy thing, but it's never going to be the right thing. So he follows that, verse 10. With love one another with brotherly affection. What God does through Paul here is he makes love into a family. You are my brother, you are my sister. We sing it, we sometimes say it. But we become a family so deeply connected to one another that when, as Paul would go on to say, actually later, I think even in this chapter or next chapter, that we're going to show honor to whom honor is due, and we're going to weep with those we have to weep and rejoice with those with whom we rejoice. When he calls us to love one another with brotherly affection, he is asking us to make the church our family. It changes why you come here. If you come here because you like the singing. We've got some fantastic song leaders in this, worship leaders in this congregation. If you come here because you like the social activities that are going on, and we have some really fun things that we get to do together, I get all that. But if you don't come here because it isn't your family reunion, you're missing the point. You're my brother, you're my sister. I come here because I get to hang out with family. And I want to see you in such a way that when we do get together, even though we may not be together every day, I want to catch up with life with you. I want to know, how are you doing genuinely? I want to know if there's something going on in your life, can I help you out? I want to be so connected to you as family that when you are sick, I want to come alongside and help you out and do whatever I can do. You know, we just had that thank you note that was read to us. Shoveling snow, calls, cards, all of, that's what family does. They don't just wait to come together on church on Sunday and say, well, we'll see who shows up. When you have a family reunion, do you know one of the things you do? You miss the people that aren't there. So if we're going to love one another with brotherly affection, who's not here that you're missing? It's your family. Who's not here that it kind of breaks your heart that they're not? Maybe they're sick. Maybe they're traveling. Maybe something isn't going on right in their life, whatever the case may be. But you miss them because you had the opportunity to be together as family, and they weren't able to be there for whatever reason. So family checks in on one another and makes sure that each of us have the things that we need. But verse 10 is where I want to finish with and spend some time with. I want you to focus on one word, honor. In verse 10, my translation uses the phrase, outdo one another, showing honor. The New International Version says, honor above yourself. New American Standard says, give preference to one another. I want to so appreciate, value, respect, honor you, that what we do in this family is really look for ways of how to, if you want to put it in competition, outdo one another in showing the honor to the other person. You want to talk about the best marriages in the world. They are invariably the people who seem, where the husband and the wife seem to want to outdo one another in how they love one another. What they do to show love for one, how they care about one another, how they think. Even when they're going through a difficulty in their life, they're concerned about their spouse and how that's affecting them. Those are the marriages we look at and we say, man, I want my marriage to be like that. Because they're practicing what this verse is teaching. They're seeking to outdo one another in honor, value, respect, appreciation. So Paul calls upon us in this one another loving aspect to try to see the value in each other. I have been blessed in my life to know many senior saints. And growing up in a Christian family, growing up with a church family that really was like family because we lived in places where we just had to rely upon one another. Those older Christians, when I was a kid, were my second parents and aunts and uncles and grandparents. As I became the adult, and now they're much older, and I'm looking at them, and they used to be the ones that were running all the fellowship gatherings and all the teaching of the classes, and now they're gotten to an age in which that's That's just more difficult for them. It's not that they don't love it. They just physically have run out of the energy to do the planning and all the work that's going on. I love to sit in a class with people who have been Christians a long time and listen to them talk Scripture because they've lived it and I'm just learning it. And to take a look at those senior saints, and I come to this passage and I think to myself, when we are told to outdo one another in honor, generally, sadly, and I say sadly, I'm not sure that's the right word, we often think about the people that are our spiritual leaders, our elders, or myself as a preacher, or worship leaders, or others that kind of get in the limelight of all that's going on. And so we want to make sure that, say thank you for all that they are doing, which is a good thing. But what about stepping back for a moment and looking at this church and saying, whose shoulders do we stand on today? Because I wasn't here when this church was built. I didn't help get any of this thing going. I didn't put in the blood, sweat, toils, and tears. And now all of a sudden, those older people that are unable to get to all the activities and the different things, well, they kind of get put out to pasture. Because we're looking at the next generation coming up. I would tell you, outdo one another in honor says, I'm going to look at both ends of that spectrum and make sure every single person in this family of mine understands what it means to be honored, valued, and appreciated and respected. Everyone, from our youngest to our oldest. And I'm going to outdo everything that I've done in the past in order to show them how valuable they are. I'm not looking for what they can do now. Some of them cannot do as much now as they used to do. But they still have brought so much to the table that I want to lift them up. When King David was older and he was fighting the Philistines, that seemed to be an ongoing thing from young David and Goliath to old David. Okay, the Philistines were the nemesis. They were the thorn in the flesh of Israel. David goes out to fight them, and he is fighting them. And the bottom line is, physically, he's losing, and his life is in danger. And some of his mighty men, that's the phrase that's used to describe these guys, step in and defeat that Philistine that was going after David. Do you remember what they say to David? Or I'm not asking you to say it out loud, but do you remember this? They say to David, no longer will you go out to battle. And here's a phrase, lest the lamp of Israel be extinguished. Their point was, David, the service that you bring is not because you can wield a sword that took down Goliath. The service that you bring is because of the spiritual maturity that you have brought to an entire country. And that's bigger than one sword. And they valued him. Honor one another. Outdo one another in honor. Look for ways to show honor to the people that so often are overlooked for whatever reason, because they're not standing up front. But let me begin to wrap this up. Sometimes you don't feel like you are appreciated enough. Or maybe you have slipped through the cracks, or you're not as valuable as others. It happens for many reasons. But I want to give you a personal story. I have got so many wonderful memories of my time in Alaska and growing up there as a teenager. But one of those memories that really just is deep within me was I was able to achieve certain things because you could be a big fish in a little pond. You know, you don't have a whole lot of competition. and I played tuba. I'm not overly tall, so I mean like the instrument's like almost as big as I am. In fact, my freshman year, they shoved me into my tuba case, and that's not a fun thing. You thought being thrown into your locker was bad? I loved playing the tuba. And I would practice after school. And I, you know, my senior year, I even did a solo. And I had a pianist and played, I don't think it was Baby Elephant Walk, but something like that, where the tuba was a fun instrument to play. Well, I tried out for the honor orchestras. And again, remember, this is Alaska, so don't think too highly. And I made it all the way to states. So I went to Allstate playing a tuba. Now, you have Allstate Band, Allstate Orchestra, Allstate Chorus. Because we're so small, the concert is all three of them in one because everybody has to get to the same place anyway. There's only one tuba in Allstate Orchestra. And I was that tuba player. In Allstate Band, there was, I don't know, four or five. So I am the only tuba in the orchestra. And I go to our first rehearsal. And we're sitting, I don't know, a cafeteria there in Anchorage. And the conductor comes in. And everybody's tuning up. You don't tune up a tuba, by the way. You just blow it. And you've got the violins and the cellos and all of these beautiful instruments that are going on. And then we begin the first song that he picks for us to play. Now, I had practiced my music, but it's really hard to practice tuba music for Allstate without any other accompaniment going on. But it's the music I had to practice, so I practiced before we went up to Anchorage. And I hear this beautiful, I mean, I fell in love with classical music my senior year of high school. Those students were so far beyond me. I so did not belong there. I mean, come on, you just got to play like a really, really low B flat. That's all you got to do. So he picked out, I think it was Shostakovich, he picked out a song, and I didn't know classical music. And so he has us practicing this song, and I'm hearing things that don't make sense to me. They're duets that are going on in the song, but they're almost like polar opposites. And what I find is right near the beginning, the duet that is played is between the piccolo and the tuba. And with all of these wonderful people, I am now having to play this duet. And the girl that was playing the piccolo was fantastic. These two polar opposites. See, I just didn't feel like I had any value there. You had stringed basses. I don't even know why you needed the tuba, but for that song, I was essential. You couldn't have played the music the way it was written without the tuba. And he stops everything. And that's the point he made. And he points way to the back, because you know tubas are like way in left field. He said, so we got our tuba player back there. And of course, the piccolo, they're like everybody's favorite, with the violins are right up front. And the piccolo. He said, I want you to hear this as we go through this music. I want you to feel what's happening, what the composer is trying to bring out. He's like, play those notes for me back there. And I mean, I am like shaking. Okay? But what happened, I didn't speak to anybody. And afterwards, I felt included. Here's my point. If we don't know how to honor one another, sometimes somebody that's a part of the symphony doesn't even know how valuable they are. They just go along to get along. They're just here. I'm nobody special. I can't sing very well. I don't teach a class. I don't do these things. And they're all about what I don't do. Until someone steps up alongside of them and says, let me tell you what you do do. Number one, your presence here tells me you have a faith in Jesus Christ that is so important. You make it your purpose to worship him. I need to see that as an example. Thank you. But I don't sing very well. I don't preach. I don't do any of the other stuff. I'm just a member. No. You're my brother. You're my sister. And you bring so much to God's symphony. And we need you. Because loving one another is a family. And you have just as much value as anybody else. Jesus, showing the full extent of his love, after he gets done washing their feet and telling them about this new commandment, it says in verse 35, by this all people will know that you are my disciples. And then he defines the this. If you have love for one another. The world will know who the disciples of Jesus Christ are because how they love fellow Christians. And really how they love, period. But in this particular case, the family of God. The world will look at that and the world is going to say, I don't belong the way other people belong in that church over there. I don't have the relationships the way they do. They're always about one another over there. They're looking out for each other. Everybody feels special there. And that becomes an attraction. And Jesus says, the world will know that you belong to me when you show love to each other, which he defined as loving others the way I've loved you. So it's a one another. We're going to get five of these, by the way. Hold on, get your seatbelt ready. Because as we think about fellowship, as we think about family today in this particular lesson, and honoring and valuing one another. Sadly, there are people who aren't a part of that family. And sadly, there are people who have struggled with a sin that are a part of the family, and they're trying to figure out, how do I get back in when I feel like I've messed up so badly? It's because we love you that you will never be ashamed to say, I need a Savior. It's because we love you. So maybe you're here today and you feel like that prodigal that has wandered so far away. Come home. Be a part of the family. We love you. If we can help you to see the value you have in your life, then won't you come as we stand and as we sing?